Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. I'm honored to be your host today. My name is April J. Ford. I'm an author and speaker that teach people to develop the right mindset for success and to increase their revenue stream based on a unique business model that I teach. To find out more about my work, you can either go to www.joysofyah.com or www.authoraprilj.ford.com. I want to express my gratitude to Tom Cunningham for allowing me to host a few of the shows here on Journey to Success. The purpose of Journey to Success is to interview people who are making a difference in the world to help encourage and inspire others to do the same with their lives. So my guest today is Tom Sutter. I had the privilege of meeting Tom a few months ago. Actually, it was at the same Think and Grow Rich Summit that I met Tom Cunningham. Tom Sutter is a dual career professional. What that means is that the serious job pays the bills and the fun job pays the heart and soul. As vice president at DS&B Insurance Services in Palatine, Illinois, Tom has taken on a business development and sales leadership roles, which involve the recruiting, training, and development of commercial insurance producers while maintaining and growing his own book of commercial insurance and employee benefits clients. Tom also co-founded and is president of CAL's All-Star Angel Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit organization located in South Elgin, Illinois, that grants wishes of children battling cancer and financially assisting their families. Training and coaching has been a part of Tom's life since his college days. He received his bachelor's degree in economics from Northern Illinois University, where he also was involved as a pledge trainer with the Sigma Chi fraternity. Having a blended family of six children, whom are all active in sports, Tom enjoys spending his spare time coaching one or more of their baseball and softball teams each spring and summer. Having lost his oldest child, Cal, to leukemia in August of 2006, Tom and his wife, Cal's stepmom, Stacy, enjoy spending their spare time helping other families battling pediatric cancer cope with the struggles through their nonprofit organization. Their children are also actively and enthusiastically involved in carrying on their older brother's legacy of always caring about others above anything else. Welcome to Journey to Success, Tom.
Thanks, April. Thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be involved here.
You know what? First off, Tom, I do want to acknowledge, you know, all that you have gone through. And, you know, you knowing my personal situation of having to deal with the loss, you know, as well. And for you to not only transcend through your own grieving, but to rise others along with you, you're such an inspiration for me. And again, welcome to today's show.
Thanks. It's, I know when we met, while it's different, it's the same thing. You know, we both lost somebody near and dear. And it's a commonality. Sometimes I wish it's a commonality I didn't have, but I do. And that kind of develops a different bond, doesn't it?
It does. It does. You know what? My thought on that is that I don't know. I've shared this with a few people is that, you know, obviously my loss of, you know, losing my husband is different than you losing a child. But what I always tell people is that, you know what, no matter where the infliction point came from, at the end of the day, you know, we're all humans and we experience the same type of emotions, you know, emptiness, sadness, sometimes even anger, loneliness, you know, and so on.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter. And I tell a lot of people what I'll tell them is, you know, whether it's your grandmother, your best friend, a friend, it's you experience a loss, and at the end of the day, it's somebody who you loved and was near and dear to you, and it's now a missing piece that's never going to, come back and be filled.
Right, right. So let me back up here just for a second, because I know while I was introducing you, I think many of our listeners are probably wondering, you know, how is Tom able to manage all this? What's your key to success or philosophy in running both your insurance business and the nonprofit?
Yeah, I tell people there's two things. I tell the funny part, I say it's I just give up a lot of sleep. But
sleep is overrated.
Yeah, sleep is overrated. Why do you need that? You know, if they can invent something that you can take and just give up sleep, that'd be great, wouldn't it? You just work 24 hours a day and you get a lot done. But no, what it is, it's being able, you know, and I tell everyone, because I get to ask that a lot. They go, how do you go from, you know, working on a nonprofit to working to a for-profit and doing this and doing that? And it's a lot of it is being able to compartmentalize the tasks that you have to accomplish. You know, you kind of look at your day, and I start my day the same way. I'll get up maybe an extra 15, 20 minutes before I really have to, and kind of lay out the day, and I say, okay, what do I need to do today from a family perspective, from a nonprofit perspective, and from a for-profit perspective? You know, what are the goals? What are the tasks? What do I need to get done? And then you look at how much time you have. Because as you were saying, you know, with coaching and the kids and all these different sports, and you really have to break it down and say, okay, now what are the most important things to get done? What do I want to get done first? And you know, what do I need, you know, with the – and I start out everything – I try and do in following the Napoleon Hill principles of basically, you know, being there for others and doing stuff first. So I kind of look at that. I'll start my day. I'll do some Cal's Angels and nonprofit work to start the day, because that is fulfilling. And when I put in there that pays the heart, you know, being able to start your day doing stuff for others, at whatever I'm doing, even if it's just paperwork, I know it got the organization that much further along to be able to help people. And
right.
So, yeah, it's, you know, to start a day that way. And then you go into, you know, you start out and then you'll go and then you start doing the insurance work. And if you really look at it in every perspective, because my real definite purpose that I've figured out in the last couple of years is helping others. And so I've always looked at how, you look at the training, you look at coaching. I started out even in the fraternity training the pledges and the pledge trainer with the fraternity, Sigma Chi fraternity, coaching the kids, coaching, training, recruiting producers for the insurance business. I said, wow, that is what I've always done, and even helping my clients in the insurance business and saying, look, you have an insurance problem. You have a problem with trying to protect your assets and in trying to protect your employees. And so you look at it that way, and I say, that is what I really like to do. And so I kind of tackle everything that way, too. By being able to break it down and then say, what is the most important to the least important for today? And knowing that if I don't get it done or something done, there's always tomorrow.
Right. So you bring up several good points, Tom. I think the first thing is, like you said, always putting other people, you know, before you. And I think when I met you, you did say that you learned that from Cal, right? That was his basically motto.
Yeah, it was. He was his coach after Cal had passed. You know, his one coach, his last coach, he had always called Cal, he called him Cal Man. And I just thought it was something that somebody thought of, you know, okay, we're going to think of a name to call Cal. And we'll come up with that. So after he had passed, his coach said, you know why I called him Cal Man? And I said, no, I just figured it was a name you made up. You know, as the coaches always do, they come up with goofy names for kids. And he goes, well, he was a man in a kid's body. And he said, what I mean by that is Cal was at the top for the athletic performance. You know, he was always in the top three on every team he was on, but yet he never let that go to his head. And even the kids, number 13, 14 on the team, if they were having a hard time, Cal would always make sure he lifted them up. And even if the other kids, because you know how kids get, especially top athletes, they'll get to the point where the kids who are not so good, they'll either make fun of them or pick on them,
right,
or do something. Cal would always make sure he made friends with those kids and picked them up to where the whole team was together. And he always did that. He always just thought of the others first. You know, he never thought of himself. And, you know, you'd talk to him and he'd make the All-Star team every year. And I'd go, oh, you made it. He'd be like, oh, that's awesome. I made it. And, you know, one of his buddies, you know, that would make the team, he's like, well, of course I made it. And I go, it's kind of funny. Just the difference in the personality.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, you know, excited he made it, never always thinking he's not going to make it. And I said, well, that's pretty funny because they always had you pick for All-Star team before the season even started. They figured you were going to be on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just that was just his personality. You know, he was that kid, and that's why he's called Cal Mann. He goes, Tom, he acted like a grown-up, thinking about
right.
other people before others. He goes, you don't find, especially boys in their teens, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-old boys, you don't find them that are top athletes that act that way. Most of them don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a key takeaway. You know, we can learn from our own kids. It's not always the other way around, right?
Yeah, it is. It's when you say, you ask me about learning, and I tell people that, I go, I learned because prior to Cal getting ill with the, you know, coming down with leukemia and diagnosed with leukemia, I really, my priorities were, you know, Tom and then business. And it was kind of backwards. And so when I experienced all this and I looked at it and I said, well, here's a kid who could have thought the same way and he didn't. And I looked at what that did for others. You know, these kids who were at the bottom of the, you know, the number 13 and 14 player who felt like they were king of the world because Cal was my friend,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good to see that when you do stuff for others, to see what it does for them. It's so fulfilling.
Yeah, I think it's a very simple, you know, practical, but it's an effective approach with interacting with people. You know, it's obviously a basic principle that we should all practice. When did you basically come to terms with, you know what, this is my definite purpose in life? And like you said, you kind of self-reflected, well, back in my college days, I was interacting and leading. Here I am in my career in the insurance business. When did you come to realize that your definite purpose is to help and serve others?
I'd say it was probably two years ago, and it was you know, seeing that, and I didn't realize it right away, because when you go through something like this and your priorities are all messed up and then you lose a child, 13-year-old boy, you know, your oldest child, he passes away, everything really gets, I mean, you could really go down a path where you're just upset with everybody, including God. And I understand when people do, because I was that way. And not that I stayed upset long, it's just because you kind of question everything. You go, could there really be all these things? Could that happen? And 6 months after we started the Cal's Angel, the foundation, we had our first golf outing 2 months after we decided to start this thing. And it started at that point probably where we started seeing success right away. You know, our first golf outing, here we are, my wife and I, South Elgin, Illinois. You know, people don't even know where South Elgin, Illinois is. And you know what I mean? They go, South Elgin, Illinois, where is that? I go, well, it's South Elgin. I go, western suburbs towards Rockford, you know. And so we started this thing, threw out an email to friends and family and say, can you guys come help us? 30 people showed up, and 2 months later, we had our first golf outing and raised $73,000 after expenses. Without knowing what we're doing. Yeah, and it was at that point, so you start going, oh, there is something to this. Maybe this is something we should be doing. And so as the years go on, we just continue to grow, add events. You know, we now have raised a little more than almost $1.5 million since April of 2007.
Wow.
So, yeah, a little more than 6 years, $1.5 million, and we run at 95 cents every dollar going to the cause. And it's, you know, at Lurie Children's Hospital here in Chicago, it's one of the most, you know, most renowned hospitals in the world for children,
right,
one of the biggest metropolitan areas, and we sponsored 2 out of the 23 floors at the hospital have the Cal's Angels name on it. And so when you start seeing all these things happening and you really think about it, because this is just my job that pays the heart.
Wow, 2 entire floors of the Lowry Hospital, that's major.
Yeah, it's when you walk off that elevator and you see the plaque on the wall, and it says in one floor is in conjunction with the Cole's Children's Museum, is Cal's Officer Angel Foundation. This floor is brought to you by both these organizations, and then the other one is the Peggy Notabart Nature Museum. And you look at that and you go, wow, I have two floors, and you're in there with Chase and Citibank and American Airlines, United Airlines, and there's Cal's Officer Angel Foundation from South Elgin, Illinois. And so what the success of that, and the point I'm getting at, is in the last year and a half, 2 years, when I really looked at what we've done, and it's really a part-time job that I do in the morning, and I'll do sometimes during the day a little bit, but then at the end of the day, and then we do events on the weekends, that I said, that is really my true definite purpose, was probably doing that and helping others. And that really helped me get to that point when I saw that you do this on a part-time basis and it's turned into what it has. You know, we've helped
right now.
Yeah,
I think feeling a level of impact and a sense of also fulfillment and empowerment. I mean, like you said, as soon as you just even step off of the elevator and feel the environment that you help to manifest and create.
Yeah, it's very humbling, and because, you know, we, like I said, we don't go out there and do this for a living, and even though others now are saying, you know, maybe you should start doing this stuff more. I mean, just look what you've done doing it part time, and that's maybe something for the future. But right now, it's just such a good feeling, and like I said, that's what really my true definite purpose has been defined by what we've done through the foundation. And I look back, and like I said, all through my life, all those things kind of added up, saying I've always done the training, I've always done the coaching, and I've always loved doing all that and helping others, whether it be kids succeed or salespeople succeed in their careers, and I've just loved doing that. And then with the Cal's, being able to help, you know, now we've helped over 300, and I think yesterday we did number 328 of the families we've helped, 328 families we've helped now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
If we could just back up a little bit, if I'm getting my timeline correctly, was it 6 months after Cal's passing that you decided to create the foundation, Cal's All-Star Foundation?
Yeah, it was. He passed in August. He passed August 28, 2006. And you know, I'll even back up even further. What really prompted us wanting to do something was he fought it for 14 and a half months. So in the summer of 2005, one of his roommates, you know, Cal's 12 at the time, his roommate's 14, and they both have leukemia, and the other boy was an only child. And so the dad and I were hanging out with the boys playing PS2 and playing PlayStation, actually they called it PlayStation 2. I have to correct myself. The kids will correct me. Because it was PS3, PlayStation 2. But, you know, he goes, hey, can my son hang out with you guys? I've got to, he goes, I've got to go and get my car and go visit my wife. And I go, oh, you go, where's your wife at? And he goes, well, and I'll remind you, only child. He goes, my wife is at Northwestern because she has breast cancer.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah.
So he
has and
son in the room with Cal, and his wife is in another facility.
Yeah, and that's where he was going to spend the night. So he's like, is it all right if my son hangs out? And it's at that point when you go, oh, my goodness, this stuff really happens to people. You've only heard the stories. You know, you hear these stories. And here I am witnessing it full time. And then he said he had to get his car from the mall 2 miles away, and I go, well, why don't you just get the parking sticker? It's only $2 to park. And he said, well, taking care of everybody, I lost my job, and I need that $2 to eat. And I remember that night was when I called my wife. We went after Cal and the boys went to bed, and his roommate went to bed. I called and I said, look, I told the whole story. I said, we need to do something. I don't know what, not now, because we're dealing with this, I said, but after this is all over with, we need to do something. And that's really where it started. And then after Cal passed, about 6 months later, is where it came back to me, and I said, remember when we talked about that and that whole story? And it kind of, so March of 2007 really is when we sent out the email, and we founded the organization in April of 2007, so.
Wow.
Yeah, so I can always think back to that story, though. I said there are, and I really think I was put into that situation and to experience these things so that it sunk in, saying, you know, there was some master plan, I really think, along the whole way, that this was all supposed to happen, and I was supposed to be exposed to all these things, because I had a real good friend of mine. He leads men's groups and all that, and I've been to his groups, and you know, first thing he asked me, he goes, if this would have never happened with Cal, would you be doing what you're doing today?
Right, and that's
without hesitation, I said, no way.
No.
No way, no how. I say, because I wasn't like that, you know. I didn't see it. I didn't know what was going on, and I didn't realize these stories were true.
Yeah, and that's why I asked you a few minutes ago, when did you actually come to terms or realize, hey, Tom, this is your awakening? When did you accept this is your definite purpose? Because, like you said, you did your own self-reflection when you look back in your life, starting from, you know, college to your career. This has all been in alignment, you know, according to your purpose. And it was when was Tom going to be ready to accept his role and responsibilities, right?
Yeah, it was a while. I mean, I'm one of those. I tell everyone I'm a little more hard-headed than some people, and I try and resist. Is it resisting change or resisting, you know, doing something different? And then sometimes I really think that things need to be just be beat into my head sometimes for me to realize them, and which is why I was put into the predicament of, you know, experiencing this with these other families and seeing this guy who lost his job and he needed $2 to feed himself.
Now, do you still keep in contact with that guy by any chance?
You know, we lost touch. Cal had been transferred down to St. Jude's, and then we went back up, and then we came back to Chicago in conjunction with St. Jude's, and then we went up to the University of Minnesota. And along the way, we lost touch, and I don't know, you know, the whole story, and I've checked in on him, and they've been trying to go back in the records and figure out who he is, but no, we lost touch, so I don't really know.
Maybe this interview will find his path, you know, one day, and you guys will reconnect.
Yeah, it's we've been trying to do it, and I know the hospital always tells us, well, we're looking, but we have to worry about, you know, HIPAA privacy.
Right.
You always have to worry about all that. So, but yeah, no, we lost touch. I wish I would have kept touch, but, you know, when you're going through something like that, you don't really think straight.
Right. So when, like you said, afterwards, when you're storm or somewhat settled, you went back to your wife Stacy and said, hey, remember that conversation we had of, you know, starting this foundation? What were you focusing on as far as the, you know, quote unquote mission? Like, okay, let's create a foundation, but what were you really hoping to accomplish with starting the foundation?
You know, we had, it's funny you asked that, because we talked about, we were just talking about it the other day, Stacy and I, and we didn't really know what we wanted to do. All we said was we wanted to do something. And,
okay.
And it was in the email to everybody. You know, we said this is what we experienced. We want to do something. We don't know what. Cal is a big baseball player. Do we do anything with baseball? Do we do scholarships for baseball players? Do we do stuff for kids? We do stuff for the hospital. And we said we didn't know. And so we originally, when we first all met, we said, well, why don't we start and let's look at, you know, with Cal being a big baseball player, and sometimes these families don't have enough money to pay for their kids to play ball or buy cleats or a bat or a mitt. And that stuff does get costly. And we said, well, why don't we do something along the lines of a scholarship for baseball players? We'll come up with all the parameters, and let's fund little league programs where kids who can't play can play, and let's see what happens, and we're going to try and figure this thing out with cancer and how do we do it. And so everybody, you know, because they're all there for you. They're all your friends and your family. And, oh, we're right in there with you. Let's do it, you know. And you're all excited because everybody wants to help. And and like I said, the $73,000 after expenses at the first event, we sat there and we go, oh, okay, I think we can do a lot more than just – I think we can do a lot more than just fund some scholarships and help kids play baseball. And that's where we started talking about the wishes, financial assistance for the families when they can't pay the mortgages, the medical bills, the car payments. Like that guy, he needed $2 to eat. Well, guess what?
Right.
I can give you gift cards now. You can go to whatever restaurant you want to, and we can help you with that. Or you need your car payment made, let us know. And it's just kind of evolved from there is how it's – yeah. And you look at it and you go, it's on autopilot, and that's where I say it's almost that – I shouldn't say almost. It is definitely what I'm supposed to be doing, because when something just almost happens effortlessly.
Effortlessly, right.
Yeah,
but
that's
a
tongue twister.
You, like,
that was a tongue twister trying to get that out.
You had to accept that role and responsibility. And like I said, when you and Stacy first talked about it, I don't know, but we'll just do something. But you know what? I highly applaud you for, you know, relying on your faith. Like, well, we have to do something. Most people, you know, don't even have that belief or that faith to walk out and make the first step and, create an action, right? You don't know what your action plan is, but just to take the first step and doing something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and it's you know, I look at all the people we have involved, you know, all our volunteers, our board members, all the people that sponsor us, the companies, the businesses, the individuals, and we listen to everybody and we say, what do you think, and what can be done better, and what didn't you like, what do you like, and what can we change, and it's really keeping that open mind about everything. I mean, you know, not that everything everybody suggests we do, you know, we don't do it all, but yeah, you know, it's always listening. And then we get really involved with the hospital. You know, what do you need? You know, we started a program two years ago, we go down to the hospital. We do a toy drive at Christmas time, but we don't give the toys out at Christmas. What we do is we hold them, and then once a month, we'll go down with a group of volunteers to the hospital, and we basically create a Christmas once a month. The kids come out, and they get to pick out one, two, three, four, whatever, however many items they want. Oh, it's cool. And then you have the local... And now Home Run and Pizza in Chicago has been donating all our pizzas. So they become a nice big supporter. And so we go down, we have a pizza party, we have the toy drive. They do crafts and games with the kids. And it's on our two floors, 17 and 18, the two we sponsored. The 17 is inpatient oncology, hematology, and then the 18 is the outpatient floor for the oncology, hematology. And it's just... they go and they take up both floors and just create a whole fun day that breaks up the monotony, you know, that it's – because you go down, I don't know if you ever spent, and I hope you don't, but time in any of those pediatric, you know, the kids' hospitals, children's hospitals, it's you know, no matter how much you do, they always need more because they're kids, and kids just want to be active.
Right. Wow, such a heart-touching story, Tom. Let's go back to talking about a couple of the Think and Grow Rich principles, because I'm kind of hearing that in your, you know, your definiteness and purpose, your work ethic, how you've helped other people. Who taught you to do all this? I mean, to do all the 501c3 paperwork. I mean, I thought you were just an insurance guy. Here you are doing the paperwork for a nonprofit. You're doing fundraisers that generated, what, over $70,000 for its first fundraiser. I mean, that comes along, you know, event planning, staffing, coordinating volunteers. I mean, how did you basically pull all this together and still having, you know, a family of six plus a wife and hopefully, like you said, still manage to get some sleep?
Yeah, it kind of goes back. I made that comment about being hard-headed. And so I also believe I can do everything. And so when we started doing it, and my wife's the same way, and we laugh about it. We go, it's pretty funny, and both of us are the same way. We're like, we can do this. And we have. We did, like I said, that first event. We coordinated the event. there were some people that got involved that have been involved with other nonprofits, and they're, and my wife was real big with the Junior League in DuPage and King County here in Illinois. She was big with the league. She had been involved, so she had nonprofit experience, and her upbringing was her mom and dad were very, you know, very involved in nonprofits and community, so she had a lifetime of that. And so while running an event is totally different, as long as you've attended them, and when you attend them, you tend to know what works and what doesn't. You go, oh, I don't want it to turn out like that, so I'm going to do this. But, oh, I really like that, so I'm going to do this. And that's how we did it. And then the 501c3, that was one of those. We actually had a friend who was a partner in a law firm. And he said, oh, don't worry, my law firm, we do it all the time. We'll take care of it. So they started the paperwork, and literally 2 days into it, he goes, yeah, guess what? I sold out, and I'm moving on to another law firm and start my own place. And
what
so his partners and his partners go, yeah, here's your file back. We decide we're not gonna work on it because it's a conflict of interest. So good luck. And I go, so now you're moving on. I go, he goes, well, and that's the other thing. I don't do nonprofit. So you're on your own. So I started calling attorneys.
Yeah.
And I got to attorney number 8, and all of them said, well, we don't know how to do the paperwork up front, but once you're fine and registered and accepted, we can help you then. I said, well, that's not when I need your help. I need your help ahead of time.
I need your help now.
Yeah, and so I went on the internet, and I started looking up every nonprofit organization because it's required to file. Your tax returns are all public records, your bylaws, all that stuff. As long as you're a registered 501c3 that's on with GuideStar or anything, you can pull up pretty much anything on any organization. And I just pulled them all up, and I said, okay. And then the IRS website has instructions on what to do. Now, it doesn't tell you everything, but and so I just did it, and I said, okay, let's give it a shot. And so once we got past the first event and it became successful, I said, well, we need to be a 501c3, and these guys don't want to help us. So I sat down every night. I'd come home. But the kids would go to bed. As soon as they went to bed, I'd spend 2-3 hours every night. It took me about 40 hours to put it together. And then we mailed it in, and we got accepted. 2 weeks later, we got the acceptance letter. So,
wow.
Yeah, I went. I actually had people, they go, okay, there's no way you did that yourself and got accepted in 2 weeks. I go, well, I go, seriously. And so there was a guy here in Chicago, pulls it up. He goes, and then he calls me 2 days later. He goes, well, I owe you an apology. I thought you were lying to me. He goes, I pulled it up. They received it on a Saturday.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, he goes, I pulled it up. He goes, it was postmarked. They received it at the IRS office on Saturday. And not that Monday, but the Monday after that is when they accepted it, and they mailed it out on that Tuesday. I go, I know. I go, I told you I figured it out.
It kind of goes back to two things. Remember when we were at the Think and Grow Rich Summit? I don't know if we learned it from, oh gosh, I don't want to say the wrong, if it was Bernie Dorman or somebody else on stage. You know, prioritize, or maybe John Astroff, prioritize your time according to high income producing activities for your business. And obviously, when it comes to family, you know, fulfilling the values of and responsibilities of your family. And you talked about that at the beginning of our show. You know, you basically wake up every morning, you have a schedule, you kind of plan your day accordingly. And from what I'm hearing, Tom, you know, based on what you just explained, would you agree that you are basically driven with your passion? And again, going back to your purpose, that's, you know, that's really where nothing can stop you when you're determined in completing your goals. I mean, look at the 501c situation. Some people would have just used that obstacle and just given up, but you were persistent because you were driven by your passion and your purpose. Because obviously you're busy. We're all busy. We have families. We have careers. We have multiple jobs, some people. But I think it was your burning desire, you know, to work within your purpose, and that's how you were able to accomplish all this.
It's Yeah, you put it very well. It's, and I think anybody, if they really want to, you know, put their mind to it, that you can accomplish pretty much anything. You know, as long as you have that drive, you have your definite purpose, and you figure it out. And I really think, and I alluded to it, I said, you know, there is a whole path here that was kind of played out. Mm-hmm. And that if it was meant to be also, that there's something there behind it that's helping you along, you know, and it's that whether you want to call, you know, it karma, or you want to call it God, or you want to call it whatever anybody wants to believe it is, there is a, you know, I really think that there's other powers involved. I prefer to say my faith that has been reinstilled in God through all this, saying, you know what, there is, because, yeah. You know, like I said, you need to sleep at night, you need to be able to figure out, you need to do all these things, and there's no way I was able to do all this, or my wife was able to do all this on our own.
Right, right. I firmly agree.
Right, right. And so you just put your hands and you go, I'm putting my hands here. I've done all I can, you know, do with it what you think should be done with it. And here's what you have. So, you know, when you're talking about that and you're driven and like I said, with the 501c3, I'm going to get this done. I'm going to figure it out. I said, okay, none of you want to help me? Okay, that's fine. I'll get it figured out.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. You know,
what would you like to see the foundation say, you know, 1 year from now, or is the 10-year milestone coming up, what is it, 2016? Is it 2016?
For Cal?
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be, yeah, because he was 2006 is when he passed away.
Where would you like to see the foundation say 1 year from now and then at the 1 year milestone, or 10-year milestone, excuse me?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you ask that, because we actually sat down, I sat down with some of the board members, and I said, okay, we need, you know, because we always thought this was going to be a hobby and it wasn't going to really take off like it did. And so now it's actually become a viable, you know, entity, and it's sustainable and it's running and it's become real. And so I said, where do we want to be 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, you know, down the road? And what we want to be, you know, our vision is to be able to take care of every child in the Chicagoland area. Because right now you have to be real careful. You know, the IRS has all their little parameters. You have to, you know, so you don't act discriminate. You know, when you're not discriminating, you have to pick out, you know, these are the kids we're going to take care of from this location, from this hospital. And so right now we deal with Lurie Children's. And almost every cancer diagnosis we're able to help. And so as we're going on, we're our first step in a year, we want to be able to say every child at Lurie Children's in Chicago that's diagnosed with cancer, we're going to be able to help them. That's our one-year goal. Our 10-year goal, or to get to that 2016, it would be great to say we're actually being able to do this, because Lurie really is the big, I call him the big boy in Chicago. Most of the families end up there, the bulk of them do, and even if they go to another hospital, a lot of them end up getting referred to Lurie Children's. So,
how many families right now currently at Lurie's?
The new diagnosis per year is anywhere, depending on what year it is, anywhere from 250 to 300 kids per year are newly diagnosed just at one hospital. But when you look at the other hospitals in the area, they really, you might double that amount by taking all the others, or maybe even just go to 750 to 1,000 tops. You know, so they're the big ones, and then the rest kind of filter in around them. And so, you know, 2016 would be maybe 1 year short, but our 10-year plan, which would be, you know, 2017, to say that we've been in existence 10 years, that we are now taking care of every child with a wish or financial assistance in the Chicagoland area.
Okay. Wow. Well, I think you guys are going to go way beyond just those parameters that you've set yourself with those limitations. I think you guys are going to go way beyond that with the further reach.
Yeah, you know, and to be able to do the sponsorship of the floors and taking care of the playrooms. We take care of the playrooms too at Lurie Children's. We committed $10,000 per year per floor at the two floors we're on to take care of the playrooms, update them, new computers, games. You know, I know at the end of this year the new PlayStation's coming out and the new Xbox is coming out, so all the kids are going to want that. You know, we're developing a teen room at the Lurie Children's where it's going to be a nice teen room set up just for teens, because right now it's semi there, but, you know, they kind of get intermingled with the younger ones, so sometimes teens don't really like to hang out with the, you know, 1 to 5 year olds, and so we're coming up with a teen room concept. But to be able to, so what you're saying is it would be great to be able to do at all the kids' hospitals, come up with these floor plans and the teen rooms, and because that was one of the big things when Cal was at the old, now it's called Lurie Children's, but it was the old Children's Memorial before they got rebuilt downtown Chicago. You know, he, one of the things he said, he goes, I, you know, they really need to do something about these playrooms. They are geared for little kids. And so he didn't even want to go to the playrooms. You know, most of the kids, you'd find them in there were the young ones. And the older kids just kind of hung out in their rooms and didn't do a whole lot and get interactive. But there is a whole component of healthcare where interaction amongst your peers is a huge benefit. You know,
right.
And so if we can develop something to get them out of their rooms and get them going into the playrooms and interacting with peers from their floor, I mean, there's a huge benefit to that.
Oh, wow. So I wish we had more time today. In closing, Tom, again, I appreciate your time on Journey to Success. If you could tell the listeners, again, your website and any other last-minute closing remarks that you'd, you know, like to leave us with.
Well, the website is Cal's Angels, that's CalsAngels.org. In any closing, you know, if you're looking for, whether it's Cal's Angels or any other organization that deals with pediatric cancer, they are way and then above and beyond what anyone can imagine what they do for these kids and these families. So when you see kids, new iPads, whatever they want, you know, anything, even if you brighten their day just for even a few moments, it's such a big change in a kid's life. And in the family's life, that I urge everyone to just get involved, especially with the kids' organizations.
Great. So make sure everybody, you guys, check out the website, www.calsangels.org. Also, you know, click on their events, go out there and support them, support their team, as well as their products. I know most of the events coming up for Cal's Angels are going to be offering a healthier alternative for coffee, the Organigold products, and they keep 100% of those profits. It goes straight to Cal's Angels Foundation. Alrighty, Journey to Success listeners, that's your show for today with Tom Sutter. Until next time, I'm author April J. Ford, and remember to find your passion and your purpose and to let it blossom. Bye for now.